folks. Good speaking with you. Thanks for being here. This is Henrik, and you're listening to Red Ice Radio. Just a few quick announcements. We are going to be covering the Republican National Convention in Cleveland live starting on Monday, the 18th of July. It's going to be going for about 4 days in a row, and we will most likely be covering 3 out of the 4 days. We're still hashing out the schedule and pinning down the exact times, but this will be live streamed a couple of hours each day. Stay tuned to redeyes.tv and youtube.com/redeyesradio for the live feeds and more info about when the streams are kicking up. We are going to be patching into a few different people throughout these days, and we'll have Matt Forney as our featured reporter as well. This means we will not be doing a regular Weekend Warrior live stream. This Saturday, we'll spend some time planning for the convention instead. And the following week, we'll do the same for the Democratic convention in Philadelphia as well, so stay tuned for that. And by the way, if you're going to Cleveland for the Republican one or to Philadelphia for the Democratic convention, definitely reach out to us. We'd love to have your help and your assistance throughout the coverage in whatever way you can. So write to us. It's redice@protonmail.com. You can also reach us on the social networks. Well, today we're going to be talking about the rise in terrorism in the last few months with our guest Jay Dyer. And in fact, just one day after we recorded this show, we had another terrorist mass murder attack in Nice in France. You probably heard about it by now, with over 80 people killed and hundreds injured. Some damn Tunisian maniac drove into a crowd down at the boardwalk by the water while the French were celebrating their Bastille Day. I guess this is echoes of the French Revolution after all. But this is what a multicultural society produces, and this is what happens. Absolutely a travesty. But be sure that we can expect more of the same in the coming months, unfortunately. Well, as I said, Jay Dyer is with us. He's behind jaysanalysis.com. His graduate work focused on the interplay of film, geopolitics, espionage, and psychological warfare. He's been with us before many times on the show, talking about this interplay between deep state activities, conspiracies, and false flag on one hand, and the insane liberal lefty policies on the other that has been the driving factor in many cases when it comes to these terrorist attacks, at least where we see Muslims involved as terrorists. We'll go deeper into this today as we put the majority of focus on what happened in Dallas and the shooting of the cops. Hey, Jay, welcome back. Good to speak with you again. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for coming back.
Yes, I think last time we discussed San Bernardino, so I'm glad to be here and once again looking at the same patterns of events and so-called terror.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've definitely kind of, I guess, let down those who support the false flag narrative here the last few events that we've had. So I definitely think it's time that we give some room to this angle on the show. And I wanted to obviously speak about Dallas with you. And I think there are some things that in the analysis that we agree on and maybe some that we don't. We've kind of spoken before on previous shows, actually, when you were with us previously about the, if you will, the alt-right versus the conspiracy perspective and kind of how these, you know, play out each other to a certain extent. But in your latest article on the Dallas dialectic and what you call the summer of Uncle Sam, you talked about this instigation towards kind of a racial war and agitation with the help of the media. I'm interested in hearing what you think about the desired outcome of this, but you have some really interesting points in your video that you did accompanying the article as well on this, where you break this down. You go into Manichaeism, the kind of the blending and alchemical desire of the globalists to see something come out of all of this at the end of it. But tell us first, what was your take on what happened in Dallas and why this happened?
Well, I followed it pretty closely, and I think that immediately the narrative that we're given begins to unravel, and so that's why I still remain within the false flag camp, and by that I would also include the I think pretty standard position of how provocateurs and informants and all that works. Now, there's a great documentary that in my video I included a clip from, and it's called The Newburgh Sting, and of all places it's an HBO documentary. And what this HBO documentary shows is the Newburgh Mosque attack, supposedly, and how this actually went down. And so you can actually get a great picture of all the mechanics of the radicalized informant who comes into the mosque and starts talking about jihad and so forth and so on. And this is all being taped, all being recorded by the FBI. And then by the time of the ridiculous attack. This guy has come up with this notion of shooting bazookas at American military bases and then bombing a synagogue or something to that effect. It's all stopped by a massive pageantry of hundreds of police, giant SWAT teams, and in the documentary, they even discuss the fact that this was media pageantry. Now, if what I'm seeing here is that is the pattern of the normal FBI entrapment process, and if there really was ISIS invading America and ISIS coming across the border, as much of the alternative right and the mainstream media, even in the neoconservative media, most of these so-called events come out of neoconservative sources, which are not reliable, then that makes absolutely no sense with the stories that the New York Times admits of most of the terror plots being hatched via entrapment of the FBI, and as the documentary shows very clearly, accompanied with vast police state pageantry. Now, does that mean that I think, therefore, I'm a leftist and I'm a conspiracy, quote, theorist who thinks that every person is exactly the same and that all distinctions should be obliterated? No, I take a little more sophisticated approach precisely because I think when you look at the level of think tanks, NGOs, white papers, they're more sophisticated. They're not new to race war. They're not new to this notion. We've had this psyop, agitprop notion of race war going back to civil rights and then continuing into the Charlie Manson helter-skelter oddness and bizarreness, which I think is also a deeper level psychological operation. And so I think that for a while, going back to, say, the 60s, and then you have Richard Aoki, who was an FBI informant who armed the Black Panthers at that time to give them the appearance of being radical and therefore distasteful to the population, and this really discredits the organization. So I think any of the groups that you're talking about that have these kind of what we would probably consider fringe would be a KKK, be it the Symbionese Liberation Army with Patty Hearst and that whole theatric event, or be it a Black Power, Black Panthers. I think a lot of this is provocative and engineered and created in the media. Now, there are real racial tensions, but I actually think the media is having a hard time really ramping it up. They're having a hard time getting a race war. People are too, as Patrick Hennington said, infatuated and zombified by their cell phones to actually participate in any kind of real race war. And this is why Soros has to have these advertisements to come protest and agitate, which are real. He really does have these opportunities for people to be paid $8, $10, $15 an hour to come and protest Trump or whoever, Black Lives Matter stuff. He's been, the media has even reported that he's put $33 million into Ferguson in these various events. And So there's no surprise there. I know I'm kind of going at 90 miles an hour here, but I think that it's a higher level dialectic, and that just like the Cold War or any dialectic doesn't mean that on the ground there aren't real tensions and oppositions. But I think when it comes to race war and all this stuff, a lot of this is not real. I mean, I spent the last month traveling across the U.S. I didn't have any racial problems or tensions with people. But that does not mean that I'm some sort of liberal pacifist. I don't believe in egalitarianism or that everybody's exactly the same or that we should obliterate all distinctions. I think that's – so you've got two sides of this that, whether it's Elohim City and Tim McVeigh, that being a giant Fed-run operation, and now public news, public information, everybody knows that. It's not any different with these kind of groups. And that, I think, bespeaks the social engineering aspect of this. And so I see a pattern, basically, with, especially when you look at something that's snipers. Okay, this is like high-level so-called black ops stuff, if it's real. And that's not something that is typically organically done, even if this person was a veteran. Being a veteran, as I understand it, his level does not mean that he was some special forces commando, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Rambo type guy. It just means that he was a relatively low level guy in the military. And that also, it makes it questionable given the fact that, as Patrick Henningsen of 21st Century Wire recently showed with the Andrews Air Force Base false drill scenario of last week. We saw 21 Wire called out the Andrews Air Force Base so-called live shooter scenario, which is this giant drill that went, quote, live. Now, it's just as stupid as the story of the Newberg Moss people. They're going to bazooka attack a U.S. military base. I mean, these are ridiculous stories, but so much of the alt-right, so much of the alternative media laps all this up and just regurgitates it in perfect harmony with the dialectical tension that the mainstream media is designed to create, because they really exist as propaganda tools of the White House, the State Department, and the Pentagon. They're giant CIA mockingbird pseudo-medias that exist really to agitate. So what I see written all over this is agitation prop. You're told that you have to be either pro-cop and therefore you're pro-white, or you have to be Black Lives Matter and anti-cop because cops are basically murdering everyone across the board, which is not true. There's not vast murder on the part of police of black people. Black-on-black crime is the number one in terms of violent crimes. That's what kills blacks, right? So this is all, that's just nonsense. And the media loves all these lies, all this gobbledygook to really put people into a heightened state of fear. And that's how I see it. And I think that, again, with the sniping, if you look at the history of sniping events in high-profile political sociological changes and coups, you can see the same pattern. You have 1989 Romania with the removal of Ceausescu. You have snipers that show up and start sniping police. Now, that does not mean that I'm saying communism and Ceausescu are good. I'm saying that was a style of regime change that was obviously Western intelligence, in my perspective, that was a means of removing him and instituting the new free market liberal economic order. And you see the same thing with high-profile sniping events in the Maidan, with Right Sector. Now, and Right Sector is crucial because it shows that Soros doesn't care about right or left. He doesn't give a damn what your political opinions are. It's about high-profile events can be used as charged political means of change, right? And so if you're sniping police and it's blamed on the existing government, well, then in comes Yatsenyuk and Poroshenko, right? Because they're the good guys and the West is there. And then in comes the IMF and all that stuff. So I think that it's pretty obvious if you look at it, what's going on with Victoria Nuland, you know, staging this coup with Soros and all the billions of dollars from the State Department, the Orange Revolution in the Ukraine. That pattern is the exact same as the domestic pattern of tensions in the U.S., and that's what makes it suspicious. And we have shootings all the time of different races, different groups. Black-on-black shootings, the most prominent. Why is that never in the news? Yep. Now, these are specifically chosen to be not just ratings and sensationalism, but politically charged psychological operations, I believe. And there's a lot more details, but you know, I'm rambling.
No, it's okay. I definitely want to, you know, focus primarily on the desired outcome here. There is an amalgamation that I think the globalists are after here, if you will. But just spend a moment on this. The Dallas shooters seem to have been exceptionally well trained, and there's a few questions here that we still haven't gotten any answers to. I mean, first of all, can we trust what the police said that the shooter's motives were and what he really said? Apparently, he was taken down by this robot that used a bomb to detonate. None of this, as far as I know, has been filmed or documented, right? And even David Brown, the Dallas police chief, allegedly actively stood in the way of allowing his police officers wearing body armor, which of course cost more victims.
Very interesting. Henrik, it was filmed. It was filmed in a movie called Short Circuit. Have you seen that?
Right. Yeah. Right. Or like Wall-E or something, right? Yeah. It's very interesting.
But here's the thing. It's very Hollywood, isn't it? And that's what I think makes it also very suspicious. That is ludicrous that they're going to send a robot into a building and blow it up to stop a sniper. That, to me, smacks of just complete fabrication.
Was there any, like, kaboom in the footage or something like that?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I haven't seen any of that. But so we have those questions, obviously, which always should remain on our minds. How do we use it? I feel to a certain extent, Jay, that there has been so much anti-white bashing in the media, and also, of course, you know, using the events, you know, that Muslims have performed, like in Orlando and San Bernardino, that I feel that this is like the balancing act coming into the picture here, to a certain extent, where on one hand you have a media which is vehemently supportive of Black Lives Matter, and in most every case they have more or less turned against the police, right, and sided with the blacks that have been shot. So I think that this is almost like a balancing act. They pulled out, you know, some of the worst things that you can imagine on that side of the fence, if you will, of like him being Black Power and Black Panthers and all these kinds of things. Mm. And it aids in this attempt to try to, if you will, instigate and maybe even justify an understandable hatred towards organizations like Black Lives Matter, right? So this has kind of helped to up the ante quite a bit, if you know what I mean.
It's intended to ramp up tensions, and I'm sure that in individual cases there will probably be a rise in racial attacks and racially motivated attacks and so forth, generally on the part of blacks against whites. I don't think that there is a mass epidemic of white police just mowing down black people.
Right. And also, did you see how many cops have been targeted and shot at and murdered? Just in the last week since this, you know, multiple cases.
But I don't know which of these things are real, and I take a general skeptical approach to mainstream media precisely because I'm aware of the large level of coordination and ability of the mainstream media to completely stage events as they've been caught doing it numerous times. So I don't really... I think the details in a lot of these things are generally going to be muddled, and they're not going to be coherent. I mean, how many times are we going to get the manifesto and the IEDs and the bombs and the booby-trapped apartments? And I think this stuff is nonsense. I don't think it's real. I think these narratives are created and scripted. And it's the 2D reality of mainstream media is very different from the actual reality of what's out there in the real world and on the streets. Now, the majority of the media would have you believe that it is white people that are the source of all problems, that white people are evil, and that's because the mainstream media has an obvious, I guess you could say, liberal imperial view, all right? And so I would agree with Alexander Dugin's discussion of this being the kind of the liberal imperium, right? And that's what America represents. It represents this new a cauldron, melting pot of what has to be foisted upon the rest of the world, and that includes the notion of destroying distinctions. So the root of this is liberalism. I completely agree with that. And by that, I do not mean what Americans think, you know, of left and right. It's rather, as the first interview that you and I had, we discussed the Enlightenment and Enlightenment liberalism, which that liberalism isn't even the same as what it is now, but I see it as kind of a long progression of becoming internally consistent with your belief system. So you can have these ideas out of the Enlightenment thinkers of universalized human nature and all this stuff that over time works itself out to the total postmodern imperium, which is,
right,
is America. And what does this mean? Well, it means that the source of all evil and bad has to be located in distinctions. I'm white, you're black, not you, Henry. You're not black, are you? I'm joking.
No. Well, I actually am, but don't tell anybody.
Henry Teague. No, I'm joking. But I like the cake that you made with faggot on it. That's pretty funny.
Oh, do you like that one? Yeah.
That cracked me up, yeah. But anyway, so this is, I think Dugin's correct when he says that this means that atomistic individualism and the anti-metaphysics of the post-Enlightenment empiricist thinkers, particularly out of the UK, they propose that, you know, because materialism and perpetual flux is true, you can't have any kind of real qualities that exist inherently in people out there. And that means there's no human nature, there's no binding categories like humanity or gender or race or tribe, whatever, all those things are complete fictions. And so what we're seeing is the outworking of a dark logic that thinks that it can create the new world, the brave new world, by erasing any kind of distinctions and ultimately becoming post-human. And so what all these idiot millennials who are all going along with all this don't understand is that it's all self-destructive. And it's self-destructive by design, and that's what Huxley says in Brave New World. It's intended to destroy everyone. So in that regard, I would say that I believe that, you know, these the racial tensions happen because, well, we're humans, and humans don't always get along, and just like people in a family don't get along, brothers and sisters don't get along, in the same way, nations don't get along at times. And so, but these can, of course, be exacerbated and capitalized by the internationalist elite. And I believe that internationalist elite is made up of both Gentiles and Jews, who are basically all on the same, they're all on the same page. And the same page that they all share is it's all about the liberal order. And that means the monoculture. It means the blending of everything, and that includes the destruction of gender and what in Eastern theology is called ethnoi in the Greek, which means basically ethnic groups. That's also slated to be destroyed. And one of the ways that you destroy this is through the alchemical dictum of solve et coagula. You smash these things together like a chemical reaction, and you let them dissolve or coagulate, right, into a synthesis. And I think that even though Brzezinski's not sitting around, you know, quoting Hermes Trismegistus, he is talking about Manichaean dialectics. He talks about it in his books, and he talks about it in public lectures he gives, and he talks about this as a longer, big-scale geopolitical strategy, and he says that it's very real. And the fact that he's calling it Manichaean, I mean, that's straight out of, you know, older Gnostic and esoteric views where black is white, white is black. These are just sort of flip sides of the same coin. And, you know, when it comes to these so-called events that we're seeing, I think that you continually see a tremendous amount of evidence that a lot of these people are involved in crisis acting. That is very real. You go to the Crisis Actor website, and they have non-disclosure agreements there at Crisis Cast. On the website, you can go check it out. These people are directly connected to it. Omar Mateen was not just an actor and appeared in faux documentaries. He also worked for G4S, which contracts with Crisis Cast. Now, that alone might be circumstantial, but you have so many examples of this, all the people involved in it, Luis Burbano and these different people who pop up in the event, Patience Carter. They all have IMDb pages and they're actors. And so I would be much more inclined to the view that these are staged events, especially with the fact that, as I called out first in my video on the Dallas event, there were two giant drills that took place in Dallas the week prior to, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, that took place a week prior to this so-called event. So, but what I'm saying is you can't judge things out there in the world, like, are black people and white people the same or are they different, based on what a perspective that you have on some sort of psyop or event, right? So, in other words, you can't read it that way, right? So, obviously, black people are not the same as white people. We're different types of people, right? And so, but that doesn't, that you can't let that dictate the attempt, at least, at being objective when you're going to, I think, analyze these events. And so that's one of the problems I have with a lot of people on the alt-right that do actually like, you know, the stuff that I write and that I put out. But I just see a problem in the fact that many of the alt-right will sit there and tell you that the Holocaust is a giant staged event, but then they'll turn around and talk like it's impossible for the establishment to stage any of these events. I mean,
right, it's selective. Yeah.
So, but that doesn't mean that the effect of whether you think the event really killed a person or didn't, or whether it was staged, the purpose of the event is perception management,
right?
Social engineering, and that's where we're agreed, although we may not agree on the end goals. But in my view, the end goals for the domestically in the U.S. and what we see in the EU with the terror there is the same end goals. And the end goals are, of course, the long-term plan of the global government, the continental blocs, free trade, and all that. And, you know, these are all, I mean, they talk about this all the time. You've talked about Peter Sutherland before. That guy just says it straight out. We got to destroy all these distinctions in Europe, and then we'll get the, you know, the great glorious New World Order.
Well, let me add something here. This is very, very important what you're bringing up here. I think that there are several layers to it. Let's pick this apart here a bit, because it's worth it. I think what it is about ultimately is that they're seeking to instigate war in order to bring world peace, right? They're seeking to end these conflicts by aiding and helping to instigate these kinds of conflicts.
And they always place the point of contact or the reason for the tension in distinction, and that's not the basis for tension. You can't overcome distinctions.
No, of course not. But I see these as kind of sacrifices, if you will, that is going to be the social glue for basically wanting people on a deep emotional level from preventing them from ever happening again in the future. I mean, one of the things that we see after these events time and time again is
not if we stand.
The
not
call if we... for unity, exactly. Just like we have to come together, we have to love one another. I mean, obviously, I mentioned this in the live show we did, but it's impossible that any leader would say, actually, no, I'm going to call for division and raise war now. I mean, obviously no one would do that, right? But we have to think about how, on one hand, you have a media that is hyper-driven in its narrative, in its hostile narrative, on a liberal basis, primarily towards white, I would say, today, that I'm not surprised that this kind of release of tension would occur. So on one hand, I don't doubt that there are genuine people out there that have been so ramped up by the media that they will personally want to go out and actually, seek vengeance on some level. I think there are real motives, if you will, out there due to the fact that media is driving this so hard. But I guess what you're saying is that maybe preemptively, before it even gets to that stage, you already have an intelligence and operatives in place that are kind of taking care of making sure that steam valve, that the release of that tension occurs within controlled and in controlled environment, if you will, right?
Absolutely, and that's what I think you saw in most of these events, but particularly in the Bundy event with the Oregon so-called standoff and shootout. I think that was a completely contrived event to basically fizzle that land rights kind of agrarian view of things, right? That operation completely fizzled that out, and it was executed perfectly by provocateurs. Now, I know about that because I was directly at the Bundy reunion event there with Patrick reporting on it. So I saw this firsthand. I could tell who the provocateurs were. They're very obvious. They always, they're not very hard to spot. But I feel like I have a firsthand view of how that went down. And that's the same pattern that I think we see across the board. And another key indicator is that whatever the media chooses to focus on, you can bet your bottom dollar that's chosen on purpose. And it's not just chosen for ratings. It's chosen for large-scale social engineering and psychological operations. And this goes back to the heart of the existence of mass media, mainstream media, with it being founded by the OSS. Now, it's the people that come out of the OSS, Sarnoff, William Paley, who, you know, head up the big CBS, ABC, NBC networks. And so it's been a military propaganda Pentagon outlet from the beginning. And it has the appearance of, reporting the facts and muckraking and all, which is nonsense. And even back then, Bill Donovan, who's, kind of the father figure of the OSS, right? He was arming Mao. Now, I'm not trying to get too off the topic here, but I'm illustrating that the people at that level, the people at the Council on Foreign Relations level, that's who's in the background, they're not interested in identity politics. They're only interested in identity politics insofar as it serves their goal. And one of their goals is, of course, the erasing of distinctions and races. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, that's why Donovan can go out and train Mao's guerrillas and be a Maoist. He sets up the entire OSS spy network throughout China to aid Mao. Well, I thought Mao, was against the Western imperialists. Well, no, he served them very well. He was a member of Yali or Yale in China. And so I think he worked directly for that Skull and Bones network. So at that level, you know, you're talking about complete coordination. The dialectics fade away. They dissolve because you have people that are committed to globalism. Why? Well, because most of those people have tens of millions, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars invested in the existing globalist structure. So it's in their interest and in their dynasty's interest to be globalist, right? It does not serve them to be nationalist or patriotic or have any of those kind of ties that limit you in your ideology. They're trans-ideological in their views, except that, of course, I think they do have a dark liberal imperial view.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I believe the multiculturalism as it is an impossibility, unless it's occurred organically. I think basically it's an impossibility. Historically, we have plenty of empires that have brought this in and have failed, whether there were slaves or workers or whatever there might have been. But we have Egypt and Babylon and Rome and now America and unfortunately parts of Europe too. But I think that these kinds of events is helping to kind of form a kind of a new culture that is contrived in its sense of unity, that demands these regular sacrifices, if you will, to keep people locked on target. And it's only the erosion of culture and the giveaway, if you will, of your own heritage that will maybe, at least for a while maybe, enable this multicultural experiment to work. That's my take on it.
Yeah, I think you're right to call it sacrifices, and you're right to look at it as a kind of ritual aspect. You go back to the French Revolution, and this is how the Paris Commune operated when they instituted the new calendar with new civic saints. We've been given these new civic saints for a while now, back to Martin Luther King. He's another civic saint where every city has to have a street named after Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, right? These are the new civic saints, and then now the progression of the so-called civil rights movement has been engineered into gay, LGBT. So what do we need? Well, we need a big sacrifice of martyrs.
That's
the
right.
The Orlando martyrs. And so for the new globo monoculture, yes, we've got to have the holy days and the saints and all of that. And that's what this is, absolutely.
Yeah, because, I mean, think about it. Everyone calls for unity. That somehow, well, this is going to pull us apart, and we have to get together, and it's very well run. I mean, you have to give that to them. Again, no matter how you actually view the event themselves, I mean, I personally believe that there's people that actually die in these events. But as you say, beyond that, I think it's about how they're using it that we really should look at it. And another thing, Jay, that's scary in all this too, is that, and again, no matter where kind of what side of the fence you're on, is that we're not allowed any time for investigation, right? I mean, just in the same way that we saw what, for example, really happened with Michael Brown and the way that he was shot afterwards, we should allow the same time for investigation in this case in Dallas to try to understand, you know, what really happened. But we're not given that, and people and the media is acting and casting judgment immediately, which is still kind of the driving force of the narrative of culture, that they don't give you this time to basically say, okay, well, hang on, you know, slow down for a moment here. Let's see what actually happened. No, the judgment is passed right away, and they want to see people hang in the trees, you know?
Yeah, trial by social media, that's what they want. There's also another reason that we can't believe what's in the news about these events is what Patrick pointed out in the article that he and I co-wrote on the Chattanooga event was what's called the closed loop that he talks about. So anytime these events occur in the U.S., they're immediately classified under federal jurisdiction. So any of the people who might actually do real investigation and reporting or whatever, local people, they're nixed. They're cut out. They have no access to this. And so it's all completely federal run. Now, what do the feds say quite consistently? We've got to brainwash people. We've got to collect the guns. We've got to get all these radicals that are just out there just mowing people down constantly. We've got to get the guns. Now, I don't actually think that they're really going to collect everybody's guns. I don't think that that's really possible given the fact that there's hundreds of millions of guns in the U.S. That would be, I mean, it would take you like 20 years, right, to go door-to-door trying to collect all these guys. That's not going to happen. What I think they do is that these kinds of things, even though they're forgotten, they embed themselves in the consciousness of millennials and younger. So these are long-term things, right? So
and you just make them not want to have the guns, and you're done.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't care about people our age or older. They already know they're not going to significantly change the opinions of Fox News viewers on guns. They're going to go after kids that read BuzzFeed and watch Netflix. And that's geared totally as psychological warfare to wreck them and to make them into a complete, Huxley describes them as, he has the alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon class, and this is to make them into epsilons, deltas and epsilons, who are the lowest sort of hobgoblin creatures. They're the most chemically engineered and brainwashed, and that's exactly what you're seeing with younger generations, and that's why, for example, they were all talking about how we can't have Brexit, we gotta do one global world.
They think that when Britain did this, they actually exited out of the European community overall, right? They even thought that we're leaving the European continent now. I mean, I know that Britain is separate anyway, but they equate the European Union with Europe itself. Magnificent.
Yes, and this is because islands can tip over if they have too much people on them.
Well, they should stop taking in all the people, then, huh? Maybe they want to tip it over. Well, you know, back to the main point here. I think that the creation of a one-world government lies at the heart of this, of one people, of one global society, the global village, call it what you will, and I think it also, Jay, is about pulling out of the woodwork the extremist elements to kind of let them take care of each other. Yeah. I know that there was a policy, just quickly on this, I know that there was a policy in Northern Ireland for a while where the police and the military, they actually tried to stop, these actions, and when there was fighting and bombs and stuff like that going on. And apparently for a time, they just pulled back, right? They just said, okay, let's not engage, let them just kind of take care of each other. And so the most violent extremist elements within these groups actually took out each other. And over time, you were left with, if you will, the more less engaged people, the less extreme people. And hence, you kind of created a kind of a peace by allowing these extremist forces to take out each other. And I can't help to think maybe that's what they're seeking to do here, pull people out of the woodwork to try to see who has these tendencies and kind of use them against each other or something.
Well, certainly a patsy or radicalized individuals who are entrapped or provoked into doing these things could serve multiple uses. One of the uses that I think calls into question all of these events is how the first responders immediately come on the mainstream media and pre-planned press conferences where they tout how awesome they are and how they need more funding for federalization and for gun restriction in the local areas and for tanks. So I understand that probably a lot of listeners think, you're just going along with this conspiracy narrative of the police state. That is real. Okay. There's an excellent book called Rise of the Warrior Cop. And if you read this book, he will talk about how there's a long-term plan. It's actually the RAND Corporation's done a whole draw up on this, how to completely federalize all the local police. Now, the way to do that is to have these kinds of operations happen. Now, does that mean that I'm saying that I'm a liberal and that everybody's the same? No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it is real that there's a RAND Corporation plan to federalize all the police and that they have these giant drills that oftentimes they don't mention are drills to scare everybody into thinking that there's all these jihadis running around and that there's all these snipers that are just going to attack you and that if you ever go to a movie, if you're going to get shot up, or if you go to school, you're going to get shot up. This is not happening. It's not true. The gun deaths are very, very low in terms of public venues. Terror, it's still the case. The terror is like, one of the last things that's going to kill you. Bee stings kill you before terror. That's still true. So this stuff exists for these bloated bureaucracies and what Patrick calls the cult of the first responder to justify their funding. And it's not accidental that they're all run out of military bases. All these giant drills, it's fusion, okay? So there's fusion between Homeland Security between the FBI, between the military, and all these different groups, and they want local police to be completely federalized. That isn't just like nationalism is a problem on the path to globalism. Local police departments, local cops is a problem for the path of integrating the U.S. into, you know, its version of North American Union or monoculture.
Of course. Yeah, they need the justification, and keep in mind the dream of a massive surveillance network of, as you say, militarized police, of maybe even in the future have these, you know, quadrants or sections within cities and checkpoints and everything else. I mean, it's the dream of that police state that will secure people's fears, right? But again, we got to go back to that point that all of this, not all of it, but much of it, at least as it is in Europe right now, and with, you know, with immigration and everything else, that it's these conditions with open borders and just out of control mass migration that has caused a tremendous amount of tension and division within the local population. And it's what I'm saying is that if that wasn't the case, sure, okay, granted, they might have tried another method, but what I'm saying is that this is what they're using to as the excuse for us going along with the security apparatus to just
Absolutely.
Ramp up to unbelievable levels, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. The destabilization that NATO and the U.S. have created in the countries like Syria that leads to the migrant crisis is by design, and they turn around and call for vast new security measures. It's just like 9/11, right? So, yes, that's what they want. The same people calling for open borders are the ones that turn around and call for giant, massive increases in security defense contracting budgets and so forth, because they're all tied into to that money.
Yeah, to the same apparatus. Yeah, another thing that was interesting too was after the Philando Castile shooting that I noted as well, was how well planned things were afterwards. Again, I am reluctant to immediately jump on the, you know, that this was a false shooting bandwagon. I have to be honest about that. But again, the usage of it and the planning afterwards, the T-shirts were already printed. You know, the mics were set up. There was a press conference out this just where he was shot. You know, the audio, everything was patched into the cameras to live stream this and everything. And that's very curious, I find, that
within one day, the guy has planned a sniper reconnaissance mission as retaliation for the killings that happened that day and the day before. I mean, that seems
to be random, though. I mean, obviously, in terms of, let's assume that he was genuine. Let's just assume that for a moment. Then, obviously, this must have been something that was festering for a long time, and it was just maybe this event, or maybe it is coincidental, I'm not sure, but maybe it was this event that just kind of finally tipped him over the edge. But one other thing, though, on that.
But I'm saying is sniping events take reconnaissance. We're supposed to believe that this was some, you know, intimate, detailed plan of reconnaissance and black operation. I'm saying that, the pun intended there.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that doesn't make sense, given that this was he just lost his cool, he became a hothead and just went off.
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
doesn't fit with what a sniper does.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No, because, I mean, we heard initially that there was, three people that was arrested in total? That was just completely dropped. We just came up with a lone gunman, explanation, but he apparently had IDEs, these bombs that was, you know, in different parts of the town, and I didn't hear anything on
this
that in terms of follow-up.
There's no IEDs, there's no manifesto, just like Breivik's manifesto was copy and pasted from some other bullshit manifesto. These things are created by the intelligence agency, just like all the ISIS stuff comes out of one group. It comes out of site intelligence, which is connected to Israelis, which mainstream news even says that it looks like they're manufacturing their terror stuff. Now, I'm not saying that ISIS doesn't, that there's not real bombings in Aleppo. You can go on YouTube and watch, two or three hours that YouTube allows of Al-Qaeda and Al-Nusra and ISIS to upload war footage. That's all looks real to me. But I don't believe that the ISIS videos are real, and I don't believe that a lot of these similar terror events are real. And that, I don't think that those two things are a contradiction.
Right, right. Yeah, it's very curious, very curious indeed. So the question is obviously how they seek to proceed forward with this. Let's talk about that for a moment, Jay, in terms of this amalgamation of trying to unify people, of creating a one race, a one, you know, global culture and everything else. We've detailed that it piggybacks on the erosion of the old one. But how do you think that, I mean, is this the new normal now that basically, again, as I said before, the social glue for this, if you will, for this new world order is basically to have these kinds of events recurring as kind of reminders of the fact that we have to maintain this kind of contrived unity? Or is this going to start going away and they're going to bring in something else, a new level to this? What do you think?
This is difficult. I think that they probably try things to see how they can create a new sort of pseudo religion, you know, or a new kind of, I think a lot of cults, for example, are social experiments that oftentimes are tied into intelligence agencies. Mark Hackert has a great talk that he did about Scientology and cults and how, you know, even the Russian government has recognized that many of these are intelligence fronts. And so what I'm getting at is that you might have cults or religious movements that are started by Western think tanks, NGOs, and intelligence agencies to try to figure out ways that you can create a new mythos. And I think it's very sophisticated. It's approached very scientifically. So I think you're spot on. I think they're probably looking at how can we create events that might be the foundations of a new kind of pseudo-religion. Now, I'm not saying that they're literally going to tomorrow, you know, enact some sort of, you know, religion of Saint of Orlando or something. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it's more of a long-term experimentation, probably. And we saw, for example, you see this in the Zeitgeist movement, right, where the Zeitgeist movement attempts to kind of give this pseudo-global UN-style religion approach to understanding globalism and how we need to just move into smart cities or something like that. You can look at Auguste Comte, the founder of sociology, who talked about how for globalism to basically occur, a kind of new world order, and he's following in that French revolutionary tradition, there has to be the creation of a new civic religion. So I think that they probably tried the New Age movement, I think was engineered as a kind of pseudo counterculture to see if they could, and that was very much promoted by the UN and the Lucis Trust and all that, to, you know, how can we get everybody on the same page? And this is what PSYOPs is all about. It's all about perception management and getting everybody to believe the exact same thing. So the erasing of distinctions doesn't just apply to externals of race and gender and things like that. It also applies to ideology. You can't have people having differences in thought. This is what Orwell talks about, right? You can't have differences of opinion because that assumes that there's some sort of benchmark or standard by which you can judge this is true, this is false, this is logical, this is a contradiction. Mm-hmm. That has to all be erased. That's what Orwell was talking about. That's crucial to the globalists. So I think you're spot on there. You, that's a great insight to how they're manufacturing a kind of glue, like you said, but it's very hard to do that. It's very difficult to get everybody to have the exact same views because it's so contrary to our daily experience. You go out in the world and you see, you know, this is stupid. This doesn't work.
Right.
This person is different from me.
Yep.
That's completely contrary to the attempt at the myopic attempt of the globalists to create basically a quote united humanity.
Well, you know, tolerance.
Not to do.
Take tolerance. I mean, as an industrial term, materials have tolerance in terms of how much pressure you can put on them before they break. You know, it's like this liberal religion that is emerging is seeking to kind of keep you in that state all the time where you're constantly kind of doing things that might go against your human nature, but you're slapped back into place by maybe these kinds of events. You're caged to a certain extent by your emotions, right? And the religion, the basis of it is victims, the disabled, the unnatural, if you will, and all these kinds of the hierarchy of the victim classes, if you will. Mm. That's there and held up against, you know, as a better version of the normal, if you will, right?
Democracy, the goddess that failed. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Now, we've had other events, too. There's obviously much more to say about this, but we've had other, just on a global scale, in terms of global terrorism, Brussels, Paris, San Bernardino, Orlando, Turkey, Bangladesh. It's happening all over the place and more often, and maybe that's something we can discuss more in the second hour. But I do want to spend some time speaking a bit about your latest book, and also that you're doing these kind of breakdown lectures, presentations on tragedy and hope, Carol Quigley's book. Tell us a bit about these two, Jay.
Right. Well, so if you've read my site or if you've heard any of the talks that, you know, Henrik and I have done in the past, then, you know, I deal a lot with Hollywood and basically the erection of the what I'm calling in this talk that you and I've discussed, the synthetic 2D reality that really is what fills in the gaps and gives us our worldview. And Hollywood and the mass media and the intelligence agencies are actually all pretty much in cahoots. I believe that there's a lot more coordination than most people think. And so if what I'm saying perhaps about these events sounds kooky, or that how in the world could you believe they're coordinated? Well, that's because I study Hollywood and how the government interacts with Hollywood. And because there's such coordination, I believe it's precisely those techniques of Hollywood that are used in a lot of these so-called attacks and events and, you know, terror and so forth. So it's very difficult to go to those kinds of sources like CNN or Fox or whatever to try to get an accurate picture of what's going on, precisely because they exist as a form or medium of Hollywood. We saw the repeal of the Smith-Mundt Act a couple of years ago in Foreign Policy magazine, a total globalist publication, has actually reported on how there is absolutely no laws against faking news and propagandizing and doing psychological operations on the American people. Now, they've been doing that for decades, as I argued all the way back to the creation of RKO Pictures and, you know, William Paley and the OSS and all that. That's nothing new, but now there's just absolutely no constraints on it, and that's why you've seen
it. Now it's legal, right?
Now it's, quote, legal. Yeah. I think they did that to remove any possible hurdles that could be had by, if you ramped up these psychological operations, you know, you would have a lot of perhaps blowback by people who don't want to go along with it. But now it's not. Now that you can completely sign non-disclosure agreements to participate in these events. And I think that's what's going on. Now, you know, if you disagree with me, that's fine, whatever. But the book that I've written is actually an analysis of kind of the big I'm not analyzing the directors. It's not a Hollywood scandal book. It's a look at the way that movies utilize predictive programming, the way it utilizes subtle trends of tricking us, of propaganda, of marketing, of giving us a new worldview. So what you talked about with that kind of social glue of a new liberal religion, this is more or less what I look at in the book from directors like Stanley Kubrick, his films, what are they saying? I look at Hitchcock, I look at 007 and the Fleming novels and the Bond pictures, and I look at David Lynch movies, kind of these big directors, Spielberg movies and the Alien mythos, and I kind of deconstruct it is what I do. I pick it apart and I say they're actually trying to give us a different philosophical perspective on reality than what the real world is. So that's what the book's about. You know, millions of people have read my film reviews. They love them. And what I've done here is basically rewrite a lot of that, write new stuff, and put it all into a book format. So that's what Esoteric Hollywood is. You can get that at Jay's Analysis or at Amazon, Esoteric Hollywood, Sex, Cults, and Symbols in Film. And you can also at Jay's Analysis, I did a series. Last time we talked, I think I was talking about Plato, and I went through the entirety of Plato's Republic to try to kind of ground people back in the classics of the Western tradition. So I'm very much a fan of those things. I'm very, very much pro-classical education. And I thought that just to kind of take a break from the Plato lectures and talks, which have been very successful, I think I have 95% approval ratings on all that, I decided to step into Tragedy and Hope because we've heard this book bantered about quite a bit, and people have written books on the book, but nobody's actually done, to my knowledge, there may be something out there, but nobody's actually gone through the entirety of the text. It's, you know, 1400 page book that is written from the vantage point of an apologetic for the Atlanticist establishment in the last century. So the tragedy is, of course, the wars of the 20th century. And then the hope being the liberal order. That's literally what Quigley says. The liberal order is the hope for the world because of the wars of the 20th century, which,
right, yeah,
contradicting himself completely as a absurd, almost it's total propaganda, either that or he's an idiot. He says the bankers engineered World War One and Two. So the tragedy that the bankers engineered is going to be solved by the bankers' plan for, as he explicitly says, a global one world order. So anyway, I'm doing lectures on the entirety of that book, and we're getting into all the nitty-gritty dirt and details of all of that. I'm thinking I'm about four lectures deep now.
Yeah, it was a while ago we talked about Quigley and his work. It's always interesting. It's kind of been a staple of a pinnacle, a node point of many people within the alternative truth movement or whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of material there, and of course a lot of giveaway as well.
It is. And so, yeah, if anybody's interested, I offer, you know, a monthly subscription for $4.95 to the lectures, and I also do interviews. I just did an interview with Dr. Joseph Farrell on the same topic of tragedy and hope, and I do. There's also a yearly option for 60 if people are interested.
Very good. Okay, jasonanalysis.com. Definitely check out the books and the lectures. Some good stuff from Jay. He talks a lot about this, and of course breaks down, you know, kind of current events and put it in perspective on a kind of a bigger picture, bigger scale, and looking kind of a beneath the surface. If you will.
Henrik, I forgot to mention too on the topic that we with Black Lives Matter and all this. Do you remember the Super Bowl this year?
That's something I wanted to talk about. Yes,
okay.
Because yeah, it kind of ties into this. Let's definitely get into that in a second because there's much more there. But yeah, let's take a short break here, folks. So definitely stay tuned. Check out the website in the meantime, and we will be right back with the second hour. Thanks so much.
Try to get on.
Well, well, second hour coming up with Jay at redeyesmembers.com. If you haven't already, get yourself a subscription and tune into the 1,000-plus shows and also videos and live shows that we have there for you. It's only €6 per month, and we have members passes from 3 months up to 2 years. We are an ad-free, commercial-free radio show and live TV show that is independent on the alternative right of things, pro-European, and unapologetic in terms of the promotion of our European identity. As we proceed, we continue our conversation on global terrorism, the attack on European culture, globalism's goal towards merging everything together into one. We also discuss the Black Power promotion at this year's Super Bowl halftime show with Beyoncé and the others. We talk with Jay about his take on the rise of nationalism and the alt-right, and the hijacking of conservative values, or I guess the association between Western values and things such as gay rights, and its conflict with Islam that is unforgiving of these liberal values. And by the way, before we continue, let me just tell you about some of our upcoming guests. We have James Buck, a Canadian author. He wrote Other Losses, an investigation into the mass deaths of German prisoners at the hands of the French and Americans after World War II. Very interesting show. We also have Roger Devlin on the situation in Europe and the U.S., and we have John Lash and many more coming on after this. An interesting second hour is coming up, so much more Red Ice with Jay Dyer after this break. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be right back.